All right. Hey, what's up? This is Christian from The Most High Show. And today, super stoked to have Rachel Brady with us talking about recovery, talking about social media, talking about ending the stigma of mental illness and mental health and what it takes to recover and be a whole, actual, happy human. All that is coming up on this episode of The Most High Show.
Welcome to The Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is The Most High Show.
Start recording. Yeah.
We're doing it live. Yeah, dude. Honestly, TikTok was like just a complete like 2 a.m. I should try this out kind of thing. And it blew up and I was just like, oh shoot, I guess this is a thing now. Yeah. It was totally like not supposed to be what it is now, but I guess people were resonated with it. So I mean, I'm cool with it.
Well, it's a mindset, like to think on those, like in that frame, that medium. Mm-hmm. It hasn't clicked in my head yet. It's too much work in my head still. But but I love how you're integrating it. There's been some other people who have done it too, like kind of integrating, you know, some sort of positive message into an entertainment kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I like the way you do that stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, my biggest thing is like making sure it's not too gimmicky, because I can tell that there's like some businesses on there or people that are in businesses that like, it's very obvious that they're on there just for one reason. And like people see right through that, especially because it's like a bunch of teenagers / early 20, whatever. And we can, like, it's definitely been like a huge learning journey in terms of learning how to balance. Like, yeah, this message I want to say, but like, I'm not here to, you know, preach to you or anything like that. That's why I think I do it so on the fly.
Yeah.
Where you see me through both my good and my bad, just because that's the reality of it.
Yeah. It's so interesting because, you know, there's still a part of me that is still like filtering my thoughts, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, I feel like I'm on the edge of kind of that breakthrough of like letting it out. But I'm like, that's a lot of crazy if I let it out, you know? Yeah. So I love when I see like you and I see other people, especially on TikTok, like what I notice, I see it, at least I'm attributing it to a sense of freedom, just a sense of like, here I am, bam.
Yeah. Like,
whatever it is, this is me. Mm-hmm. And I really, look up to that. You know, I think that's a cool thing to have, right? Because that's what it is to be cool, is to not care what other people think.
Absolutely. And we learned the hard way too, that even if you do try, like no matter what you do, there's always going to be someone with an opinion. So at the end of the day, like I'd much rather be hated on or criticized or whatever for who I truly am than to put a facade and have that double whammy of both being like, oh shoot, it's not big through the front, and oh shoot, they don't like the front. So kind of just like takes out the middleman kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So what I'd love to do during this time together is I'd love to hear kind of your kind of journey of in recovery, right? Kind of like what happened, you know, how'd you get to this place? Mm-hmm. And then I'd like to also talk about your decision to recover out loud and so recovering out loud. And then also transition into, because you're pretty outspoken about mental health, which I think is fantastic. The more opportunities we have to talk about that, that's better. So I'd love to dive into that a little bit more.
Absolutely.
And so that's kind of where I'm thinking. Is that cool with you?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So, and then I'll tag an intro at the end of it once we go through this and we see what actually happens.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, right.
Yeah. So can you tell me when, tell me, what do you do now? Like, what's your life like now today?
Yeah. So my life, it's pretty, I don't want to say boring, but it's very routine, which is kind of, for me being someone in recovery, I was so used to chaos. So maybe this is like quote a normal life, but I was just so used to kind of doing perpetual damage control. So now I have inner peace. I'm like, oh wow, this is weird. But basically now I am obviously a woman in recovery. I've been sober for about, it's going to be 2 years in May. So whatever that is. And then I'm also a military wife, Air Force wife. We're originally from California, but we moved to North Carolina about 2 years ago. So we're living there. And in terms of a job, I work for a downtown development corporation. So I help with event planning, economic development, all that fun stuff. And as I told you before, I kicked my dog out. She's a rescue dog, so she's our fur baby. We're not planning on having kids anytime soon, so it's just the three of us. But it's a really good life. Obviously, I still manage mental illness and all that good stuff, but I thankfully have outlets via social media, so that is a huge part of my daily routine as well, just to be able to kind of use the lessons learned in the past and what I'm going through now, just to kind of use social media as an outlet to kind of process it. But obviously, I've learned, if there are things that I need to have private time to heal, I will take that. I'm not gonna like overshare something I'm still going through. But no, that's pretty much what my life is like right now. It sounds maybe kind of dull to some people, but for me, it has all the things I've had to fight for to get to it. I would not change a thing.
Yeah, well, it's well said. Yeah, so it wasn't always like this, right? A whole life full of self-actualization, understanding your own thoughts and your own feelings, and sharing that with others in a helpful way. So, can you tell me in your past, like, when was it that you felt like alcohol or drugs became a solution to a problem for you?
Yeah, so I think my story is pretty similar to a lot of people's, where I was very sheltered in high school. I actually lived on a vineyard in California. My parents lived on a vineyard. So I grew up around alcohol my whole life. It really wasn't a taboo thing, but I wasn't allowed to drink it when I was in college or high school. So I went to school in Los Angeles, and that was the first time I was away from my parents. So it was very much the, sheltered kid goes wild in college. And for a while, it was very, college experimentation, binge drinking, sometimes taking it too far, but nothing problematic or red flags. And then I think it was my sophomore year of college, so I was about 20. That's when I noticed that I kind of had, I called it really bad luck, where I would be like, oh, like I'm always the one getting in trouble, or I always take it too far and end up blacking out. But it became so patterned that it was very obvious at a very early point in my drinking career that it wasn't what everyone else was doing. And at that point, this was 2011, 2012, so not that far away ago, but there was very much a taboo thing behind mental health or alcohol abuse, especially in college when you're like your main focus is getting people to like you. And that was my biggest thing, was validation. And I saw alcohol kind of like that form of social currency to say, oh, I can hang, I can drink, I can get drunk with y'all. Like, you can accept me because I'm one of you. And the more that I noticed that alcohol wasn't serving me, that it was causing more problems than good, the more I tried to moderate and control it. And that just kind of created this vicious cycle of blowing up my face. And then I get anxious over that, do damage control, and then drink more to numb that. So literally, it was just vicious cycle for 4 years. And then in junior year, I studied abroad, and I ended up having something really traumatic happen to me. So it came from, it started with a point of drinking to just get drunk, and then it started shifted to drinking from trauma and drinking to numb. And that's really when it kind of hit the fan. So it was very very gradual, but at the same time, I kind of knew from the get-go that alcohol was going to be a problem for me, just because of how much of a relief it was for me to feel that buzz and feel like, this is the feeling of relaxation and belonging that I've always wanted. So it was very tumultuous from the start, but thankfully I got sober at 25, which is very, like, not a lot of people are fortunate enough to say that. So
Yeah,
a lot of damage
absolutely.
in 10 years, but here we are.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I was 33 when I got sober. So yeah, but at that age, yeah, there's still enough time. And when you meet someone who's finally running out of steam at 50 or 60 years old, which I work with guys a lot who are in that stage, and you know, you can just see it on them, it's worn. And so, yeah, it's awesome, the blessing you have right now to be able to begin building or rebuilding, you know. So it started as that concept of fitting in, like that. I really, that re resonates with me a lot, because that was kind of my thing, like that. you know, that crew that I used to run with in high school. I started much younger. Mm-hmm. And that crew I ran with in high school, you know, where we were out tagging, and I grew up in California also, mm-hmm. in Bakersfield.
Okay. Which is,
yeah, you know, it's middle of the desert.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with this using drugs, getting high, drinking, going out on the street, tagging, all very problematic behavior, but mm-hmm. it filled this void that I had in me, which was I wanted to belong to something bigger than me. I don't know where that void came from, you know, but that's that. And so mm-hmm. That's kind of what it was, the social aspect of addiction, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that,
yeah, that's really what pulled me in. And then the drugs do what the drugs do, and we become chemically dependent. Mm-hmm. So when you, at age 25, when you decide, all right, this is done, I'm done, what did you do to stop?
So I knew probably like 23, when we just got out of college. By that point, I was very much open to the concept of recovery and sobriety, but it was more of kind of like the white knuckling thing of, okay, I'm not going to drink and see what happens. It wasn't necessarily, oh, I want to work on myself. It was more just kind of the, I'm just going to take this out of the equation and see what happens. So I definitely knew that sobriety was beneficial to me, but I still was kind of trying to live my old life just without the alcohol. And if anyone in recovery knows, you kind of have to learn how to do all these new coping mechanisms, because obviously you can't go back to your drug of choice.
Right.
So for me, it took a lot of, I call them slaps in the faces from God, just really bad wake up calls where I would, you know, say that I would moderate, end up blacking out. And by this point, I married my husband at 24. So he was a very big part of kind of see me spiraling out. And so that was a huge motivation for me as well, because he still is an incredible person. And obviously sobriety, you need to do it for you. But at the same time, you know, the thought of losing him was just not even an option for me. So
yeah.
I ended up actually blacking out October 2017, so 3 years ago now, wow. Had made an attempt in my life and woke up in the hospital. And it was at that point I decided to check myself into rehab voluntarily. So I did a whole month of rehab, which was definitely the right choice for me. Got out, and I had one more fun, you know, little relapse just for fun, just see what it was like. Because, you know, why not?
Sure, right.
Yeah, just to make sure. Yeah, like a billionth time's the charm, right? And after that, though, I think that was the straw that broke the camel's back. And I always tell people, like, in terms of relapsing, I kind of think of it as like a video game where if you die on a level, you restart that level and you start to know the obstacles, the, you know, tools that you need.
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't wish relapse on anyone, but I like to kind of think of it that way just so you know that you're not completely at square one, because it's very easy to get into that mindset. But yeah, May 20th, 2018 is my official sobriety date. So a lot of slip ups, a lot of day ones. I always like to reiterate that just because I don't want people to think like it's, you know, this easy, breezy, beautiful process, because it's not. It can be messy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the PG-13 version of it.
Right. Okay. Did you do any step work, or were you using any modality to do the recovery, or?
So in rehab, they highly encouraged AA. So I did go to a lot of meetings just because at that point I was like, I don't even know what to do. I actually ended up using therapy for my mental illness and for, you know, the trauma portion of it, because a lot of my addiction was rooted in trauma. So I actually do therapy for my just to work on myself. And then I also have a very strong support system. My family is very supportive. My husband, a lot of our friends are. And then a lot of journaling. And honestly, I've learned to not, you know, depend my recovery on social media, but it has helped a ton just because I kind of use it as like a public journal. And that way I'm able to kind of see other people that are dealing with similar issues, or mm-hmm. they just say, hey, you're not crazy for thinking this. But therapy, medication, my support system in real life and virtual, those have been my main pillars of recovery.
Yeah. Yeah. The social media aspect, like when, you know, when you take the time to build a sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a beautiful sign too, man.
Which we did in North Carolina, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, my cousin works at the base over there. And so he made it.
That's
And then you put the sign up and you start talking about recovery. It does kind of like anchor you to, hey, like you can't go too far, you know? So it has been, it has been helpful. And, you know, and recovering out loud myself.
Even like the fact that I have people that are a few years ahead of me or just have been in the game longer than me, I guess, being able to, you know, keep me humble, keep me always with my nose down, remembering like I'm not special. And obviously we are special, but I mean, I'm not, you know, the only one going through this. Cause I think for a lot of us, when before we go into recovery, we think, oh, like no one would understand, but you know, you get into the rooms or wherever you are and you say, oh, people are messed up as I am. Hell yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. That somebody mirrors, it's something like another alcoholic or addict to mirror back.
Oh yeah.
And we were talking about that earlier today about something, you know, somebody confessing something to somebody and thinking, oh my gosh, I've been carrying this so long. And you tell that to somebody else and they go, oh, really? Yeah, me too. And then it's just this complete like diffusing of this giant weight you've been carrying. It's like, why have I been carrying this the whole time?
Yeah? Absolutely. And it's one of those things where, you know, obviously it's, you know, valid, but at the same time, you almost can laugh it off. Be like, oh, wow. Like I've been stressing about this for months and it's not even that deep.
Right. Right. It's not even that deep. Yeah. So you mentioned, well, first I want to ask you this. Mm-hmm. Why do you feel like, you know, you can't drink? Like,
yeah. So my biggest thing I always tell people is once I have one, the floodgates open. I think for me, the idiom, like one is not enough or one is too many, a thousand is enough. That is completely me because I was raised, I don't know if it was through my parents or what, I'm still working on that, but I was raised that you drink to get drunk. You don't drink to enjoy it or to savor it or whatever. Because even when I was little, I would taste it, be like, who would want to drink this? And then even in college, I would think, who would want to drink this? I better just like chug it just to get it over with. So that was my biggest relationship with alcohol, was that you don't drink it to like the taste. You drink it to get an effect, a buzz, a numbing. And once I found that, I was like, why would I want anything else? You know, why would I want to drink and not feel it? So that's my biggest thing in terms of not being able to drink alcohol, just because it's so unpredictable for me. And I've gained so much through sobriety that I honestly can't imagine my life without alcohol anymore, which is something I never thought I would be able to say.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's the same thing. Like I got sober. I had a spiritual experience and that resulted in me losing a lot of my desire for drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. And a couple years later, I didn't do any soul work. I didn't do any eternal work. I just kind of was like, oh, here I am. I'm fixed, you know? And I started drinking and I started drinking like a normal person.
Right.
And that didn't last very long. And it was like a year. Like it was just a progression of it. I started drinking and then I was back to doing drugs again. And then it was just off. And so, you know, I didn't ever feel like my allergy was to alcohol itself. It's more drugs was the thing. Yeah. But after living through that experience, I'm like, I'm not willing to gamble that, you know. Absolutely. Like I don't have that same allergy. Like when I do drink, like I feel like, oh, I have to, but I do with drugs. And I know that once I can't remember if I was saying this on a podcast where I said this, but it's like, I'm addicted to escaping reality.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't like reality and I can't change it always. You know, I could try through podcasts and videos and stuff and I can try to affect the world, but for the most part, I'm not comfortable in reality, and so I want to escape it. And whether that's through Netflix, whether that's through sex, whether that's through drinking or drugs, it's like I want to get away from it, and that's just not recovery, you know?
Absolutely. No, that's so true. Even numbing, just I think a lot of people, that was my biggest, I guess, downfall in early recovery, was just assuming that alcohol was the problem. And there's so many more layers. Like you can take away alcohol and still be sick. That's one thing I learned, because even when I was out of rehab, like the 6 months, I was out for 6 months before I relapsed again. And those 6 months, yeah, I was going to meetings and stuff, but I was still kind of in that mindset of escaping. Like I would never I would never actually want to work the steps. It was more just, I need to just go to a meeting just to not be in my own head.
Right.
So yeah, right. No, I completely agree with you in terms of being addicted to escaping. It's still something I'm dealing with.
Yeah. On Friday of last week, we did a podcast with a licensed professional counselor, addiction counselor, and we did a documentary last year called Megan's Prayer. And in that documentary with this counselor, we went over this girl who committed suicide, and she was what the industry calls co-occurring disorder. So it's somebody who has addiction and a mental health. And okay. We were looking in this documentary about the correlations between mental health, addiction, and suicide, and how they're mm-hmm. so closely related. And so Friday we had that same counselor came on, and we talked about this co-occurring disorder, which is the term for it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, there's some sort of diagnosis of mental health, some kind of anxiety or depression, or and so it's the conversation is, you know, in the beginning stages of treatment, it's differentiating between what's the result of the drug abuse and what's the result of the mental illness. Mm-hmm. And for some, it's the mental illness is a result of the drug. Like you might be having a manic disorder because you've been doing drugs all night long, you know?
Yeah, and you're 18, yeah.
Yeah. So, but what I've noticed is in long-term recovery is there's a lot of us in recovery who have continual mental health needs that need to be met. And that's something that you've been outspoken about. Mm-hmm. And I think the industry in a total, and in just those of us in recovery are becoming more open to talk about that. And I think in the history, you know, it wasn't, it was like, you know, just pull yourself up. Just don't drink.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, don't drink. And, I'm kind of giving a big lead in here, but 2 years ago, I went to an addictionologist, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm sober. I've been sober 8 years, but I was miserable, mm-hmm. right? I was suicidal, and I was miserable. And I went to her, and she did this full hormone panel and did this whole biological breakdown on me. And mm-hmm. she said, as a psychiatrist, it's really bad when you diagnose someone with depression and you find out they have a hormone disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So she was treating me holistically. And that's really when I kind of like the light bulb went off, like, oh, okay. Like the years of my drug abuse has had a compounding effect on my body.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to need some biological help to continue yeah. in this. And so, you know, I had to get over it myself, that whole sense of what's wrong with me kind mm-hmm. of thing, you know? So for you, how have you, and you're doing this out loud through your mm-hmm. social media channels, what's that process like? How have you dealt with that?
Yeah, because that was a really big thing for me too, was kind of discerning my mental illness from my addiction. Because like I said before, a lot of it for both of them was rooted in trauma. I'm also diagnosed with PTSD. So a lot of it was like, yeah, getting rid of the alcohol. But at the same time, I would get so frustrated because I would still have all these symptoms that I thought would go away when I was drinking. For example, whenever I'd wake up with a hangover, we call it anxiety, where you have all this like a panic attack pretty much wakes you up after you've been drinking. Mm-hmm. And I would still experience anxiety symptoms and depression symptoms. I'm just like, what the heck, dude? Like, I've been sober for how long? Like, it's the DTs are supposed to go away by now. And I think one thing that's been really important for my journey, at least, is to just internalize that I'm never going to be fully healed, and that's okay, because I'm a human being. And human beings, unless you're a deity, like, you're not going to be fully healed, man. It's not, unless you're Buddha or something. And that was, I talked about it yesterday, about how there's still a part of me that's scared to heal, because so much of my recovery / just everything for the past decade has been such a huge part of my mental space. And so there's still a part of me that thinks, oh my gosh, if I get, you know, better, am I gonna still be me? Because I like me now, which is something I wouldn't be able to say a while ago.
Yeah.
So that's my biggest kind of battle, I guess, right now, is just to learn how to not necessarily group the coping mechanisms I need to manage my sobriety and the coping mechanisms I need to manage my depression, anxiety, and PTSD, because they can be different. It's not a one size fits all.
Yeah.
So I guess to kind of conclude that rambling is that I'm still working on it. I think that's like the biggest hurdle of my second year of sobriety, is just learning, okay, you have pretty much lost the desire to drink. Now, how are you going to deal with life on life's terms?
Right. So when you first got the diagnosis, right, and you kind of mm-hmm. began to understand kind of what was going on, how did you deal with that? And when I'm asking that question, I'm thinking of the person who has either just received a mental health diagnosis, right, or yeah. is possibly thinking maybe there is something and I need to get some help. Can yeah. you just take me back when you got that? How did you deal with that?
Yeah, so it was really tricky because I kind of admitted that I needed help in college at first. My friends actually kind of had a little intervention because they noticed that I would act out a lot when I was drinking. I was very much someone who bottled things up, but when then I would drink, I would just become a hot mess, like emotional outbursts, start sobbing at frat parties, like just hot mess. Definitely like the drunk white girl wasted crying. Yeah, archetype. And so for me, they suggested I go to Students Life Psychological Services on our campus. And it was really tough because they were asking, okay, like, what brings you in? And I wasn't able to discern why I was there because I knew that I had a problem with drinking, but I would also deal with these feelings when I was sober. So for me, it was really frustrating. And there was still a huge stigma in my mind, at least with mental health, because I remember I would always make my appointments as early as possible in the morning and then like sneak into the office at the side of the building, kind of like another walk of shame. So that was really something that held me back in terms of getting proper help. It was more just like talk therapy. And then after college, I still noticed that I had all these anxiety symptoms and all these depression symptoms, even when I wasn't drinking as often. So that's when I officially got diagnosed. And that was honestly such a relief. Like, I really wasn't thinking about the long-term plan. I was just thinking, okay, at least I have something to work off of.
Yeah.
Even if it's not the, you know, most accurate diagnosis in the world, at least I have a baseline that I can, you know, kind of do trial and error with.
Yeah.
So that was my biggest thing for anyone that's listening that is hesitant about going to maybe a psychiatrist or a therapist, is just to have some sort of jumping off point. I think that is huge, especially coming from someone who listens objectively, that's not a family member or friend, because they're amazing, obviously. But at the same time, having that objective look at it at face value, what do you see, is so underrated, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, counseling has been huge in my recovery, for sure. I've needed every single aspect that I can get.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So where you're dealing with it, it's to say, you know, to that person who may be suffering, is, you know, to get the help.
And, oh yeah.
Yeah. And to reach out. And there are a lot of programs. Sometimes I hear like a lot like cost, right? That we can't afford it. A lot of insurances are beginning to include mental health as a part of their whatever they give you, benefits.
Yeah. You know?
And so there's that. And then also there's a lot of programs and ways and things out there. So if you're suffering and you feel like you can't afford help, possibly even the local church might be able to help, you know, to be able to get you the help you need. But to just start asking, and you never know where the help comes from.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely have been there when I hear someone say, oh, like, ask for help or get help. And I roll my eyes thinking, you know, that's easy for you to say. But even just telling someone, and not necessarily asking for help, but just telling someone, yo, is this normal? Or is this something that you've gone through too? Either two things can happen. Either one, they say, hey, you know, that's not as normal as you think that might be. You may want to try help. Or two, they say, yeah, I've been through that too. I think both responses are equally as helpful, just to kind of get you out of your own head.
Yeah.
Because that was my biggest thing, was once I found out, hey, all these thoughts that I felt like made me a train wreck or an outcast, millions of people think them too. Like, that's crazy. So,
right. Right. Yeah. Well, and that shows like by your TikTok following,
yeah.
Right? I think kind of blew up on there pretty quick. And I think it's because what you're mirroring out to everybody, everyone's resonating with it. Oh yes, that's exactly. And I want to see more of that when I get on here, and to be encouraged. And that's really like why we started this whole thing. As I felt like, look, if all these companies can create all this content to create and change behavior in people, get us to buy cars and phones and Mac laptops, right?
Yeah.
Like, if they could get us to do that, then can we create content that helps people to be whole? Like, absolutely. Is that right? And that's why I was so excited to be able to have you on, because you're somebody who gets that, and I think you're doing it at a great level. And so if anyone else, I'm sure you get the encouragement, but I feel like I have to just tell you why I got you on here. Just thank you so much for continuing to recover out loud, talk about the things you're going through. And, you know, when that person's scrolling, you know, and I think I said, like, the average time someone spends on TikTok is like 50 minutes, an hour.
Oh yeah, I believe that. I believe even more. I mean, for me, that thing is addictive, man. Like, right. We're talking addiction, that thing is addictive.
Right. Right, exactly. And it's like compared to 10 minutes on like an Instagram or Twitter or something. It's just creating that content and putting it out there is so important. And you know. Yeah, what time are we at? How long are we at?
31, 32
minutes. Oh, dang, my internal clock is on. We try to keep them at 30 minutes.
I like it.
Yeah. Cool. Is there anything you want to say, any words of wisdom or memes you want to share?
Oh, my gosh. Memes? I don't know, man. I have a lot of those. Probably in terms of words of wisdom, just based off what I'm going through right now, is that it is okay to... Here's something I heard. It's okay to mourn your old life and not want it back. Mm. I think that's one thing that I think a lot of people are kind of in that weird stage of, they know they want to get better, or maybe they're like in the early stages of getting better, but they're like, I'm scared crapless of, you know, losing my old life or losing, you know, XYZ. So I think that's a feeling that we have to normalize, because I feel like a lot of people think, okay, well, if I want to get better, I have to ditch everything I know to become better. It's like, no, dude, like, you're okay. It's okay to like be sad that, you know, you'll never drink or use again. Like, that's okay, as long as you internalize that life afterwards is better, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. So you can mourn your old life, but just don't want it back.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's I can go into a whole diatribe about
mourning. I know.
and how we don't mourn, and we've lost the ability to really truly mourn. It's so true, though. I mean, we have to be able to say, you know what, goodbye. It was, you know, and I think in some of the fellowships and some of the recovery meeting rooms, there is something that says our old friend, you know, we can say goodbye to our old friend. And that's what drugs and alcohol and just overall disruptive behavior and living in a self-centered way.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
they had us write goodbye letters to our drug of choice in rehab. I wrote a hello sobriety one. Like, it's so cute. But yeah, no, it's powerful stuff. It really is.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the Most High Show. And if anybody has listened this far, you can hit us up, contact@themosthighshow.com, and I'll send you a bag of lollipops.
Do it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.